Hi there. Today in studio with me, I have Roger Haynes, and we're going to be discussing all things church planting. In 2015, which is now 4 years ago, Roger and his beautiful wife, Nikki, and their first daughter planted Common Ground's 8th congregation, Common Ground Tableview. So, Roger, tell us a little bit about how that's going.
Hi, Julie. Yeah, it's been fantastic. Like you said, we went there with Chloe, our first daughter, and then with Nikki, my wife. And we took a small crew of people, about 60 people who said, we're in. And then you always get your fringe crew who sort of say they're in and are still checking things out, which actually is fantastic. We were glad to have them with us. And we planted Feb 2015. And we had one of my favorite stories I tell is when we first planted, we went out there. Nix and I went. We left our home in the southern suburbs, started renting a house sort of in the heart of the northern suburbs, Sunningdale area, where we eventually planted into Tableview. And the February we moved there, we had a bunch of people who said, we want to be part of your church. And so we did our membership course, which is we called the DNA course, in our home before we had a place to meet as a church. And so it was such a lovely picture that we keep telling people in our church, because it so sort of symbolized the attitude of being a church of people before you've got a building. Needless to say, two weeks after, we had a great space to meet. We meet in a little school hall in Tableview High School. And we've been doing that for the last 4.5 years. And God's really blessed what we do. It's a really cool, authentic group of people. It feels like a real family. It's about 120 to 150 people on a Sunday, just to give a bit of a picture of what it looks like on a Sunday. And we're just delighted to be on the journey. And God's taught us a lot. Church planting is exciting. It's not for the faint of heart, but it's been good, yeah.
Well, wonderful. That's what we want to glean from you today. And I suppose the first question coming into discussion about church planting, some people might say, why plant more churches when there are already so many? What would you say to this?
Yeah, it's such a good question. I think there's a plain answer and there is a more nuanced answer. The plain answer, which I actually think is sufficient, is that Jesus in Matthew 28 said, hey, go make disciples of all nations and baptize them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teach them to obey everything I command. And so there's this, in my opinion, this clear commission. So when Nix and I said, should we plant churches? Of course, we needed to look at gifting. We need to look at our lives. But the question is not, should we plant churches? The question is, why should we not plant churches when there's such a clear commission? So that was probably the main reason why we planted this church. And I suppose there are more nuanced sort of realities to that, because a lot of people look at us and they go, you guys, you're planting a church, but look at all the churches in your area. Surely there's enough churches there already. And that comes from people really close to us. And we sometimes second guess ourselves and go, are we crazy? Did we? And then we go, one, we go to the Great Commission. And then two, I suppose, we get into the realities of the fact that God has called us to bring a specific flavor to a specific community. And I think we can reach people that no other church can reach. And other churches can reach people that we could never reach. And yeah,
absolutely. I think one thing that we would do a lot when we would have that question going through our heads when we planted in Constantiaburg was just walk around some of the shopping centers in our area. And my husband's good at this. He says, look at all these people. Most of them aren't going to any church. We're not looking for the people that are already going to the other 8 churches around. We're looking for the vast amounts of people that are unchurched.
Exactly.
In our community.
Exactly. And a lot of people, I think, have this unhelpful mindset that there is a limited ability, that the kingdom's running out. And I love what Terence says, is it's, look at how many people haven't yet heard the message. How many people haven't yet stepped into a church and had an opportunity to hear the gospel? And that's kind of why we planted, is driven by that, you know, the passion to make more disciples.
And I think another, if I can just jump in, I don't know if you concur, but another nuanced reason is there's nothing like a church plant to make those church planting core feel the most on mission with God. Am I right?
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more, in the sense that we had a community of people that we started with. We had 3 meetings, I'll speak a bit more in terms of preparation, we told people what we were about. We said, guys, we're going there to reach and love an area that has so many people who don't yet know Jesus. And I would say that 80% of those people were sitting in the back two rows of their present churches. And probably the best story we had was a guy who his wife was very keen on this plant. She said, we're going to do this thing. She was a teacher. And he said, you can do it, but I'm not interested. Then it progressed to him saying, I'll come to church, but don't think I'm getting involved because I can see how committed you're getting into this whole thing. Then he said, I'll come to life group, but don't think I'm going to serve. Like, I'm just not interested. By the sort of year and a half in, he was dragging his wife to all kinds of amazing things. And it's that story of enlistment and ownership. As you're so close to the genesis of a project like that, I think you just get sucked into that sense of purpose and meaning. Yeah, unlike maybe a more established community where it's just so much easier to watch and spectate and applaud from a distance. So that is the wonder of church planting.
Yeah, it's so many good reasons, eh?
Yeah.
So in terms of deciding where to plant, Rog, any wisdom for would-be church planters?
Yeah, I think that, again, there's a plain answer and there's a nuanced answer. The plain answer is wherever there's lost people. You know, it sounds silly, but I think in some ways we need a simplified view of church planting whereby you look and you go, are there lost people in an area? And if the answer is yes, which most of the time it is, then the question should be, well, how can we not put some churches there? But of course, that doesn't necessarily answer the question, what about my life and my giftings? If you're a church planter and you're saying, how do I know? I think for Nix and I, we tried to keep it a bit simple and maybe oversimplified it. And I'll own that part of it in the sense that we felt like we were saying we were ready in our hearts to go plant a church somewhere. And the opportunity arose in Common Ground. We were very content where we were. We just bought a house and there wasn't the sense of, you know, as Chris Vinan calls a splant. You know, we weren't splitting but making it look neat and like it was a plant. We were delighted where we were, and yet we were ready when God called us. And an opportunity opened up in the northwestern suburbs of Cape Town, and we said, well, if that's where the next opportunity is for our church, we'll go. In hindsight, I think what we did also process was the fact that there needed to be a chemistry fit in the sense of who are these people? What's the predominant demographic? And would there be any rapport between us and them? Do we feel any sense of chemistry? In that we felt like there's similar age and stage. Where we are as a church is filled with young families. We had our first kid as we planted, and then two more came after the first sort of 2 years of being there. So it was a perfect place for our season. Loads of young families, new homes being built. It suited the scenario. So there was a chemistry fit with the area, which I think is crucial. But then I think there's also the character dynamics that it's sort of working out, are we ready to go to this place? What are the challenges that we're going to face in this specific space? Which I actually didn't realize. We were going to a place filled with divorce and broken families, and we were going to face a lot of broken churches. And I didn't realize how much we were going to dig deep to be able to disciple so many hurting and broken people. And that's something worth noting. Who are you going to, and is your heart ready to be able to bring the gospel to a place where they have their own message they're trying to infiltrate your heart with?
Oh, gee, that's so good, Rog. Sure, it's one of the things that I love that. My question was where to plant, and you said actually first look at your heart. Hey, is your heart ready for this plant? Wherever it's going, it's going to encounter some broken people that you need to have dug down roots for.
One other thing, sorry, is of course calling. You know, I think there's the hyper charismatic where you basically throw a dart on a map and you sort of go, okay, that's the place. And then there's more, you know, of the conservatives where someone else tells you where to go. And, you know, some church movements have said, you're going there, and the missionary goes to his post. And I think you need a balance of both, where you need to hear the revelationary realities of God, where he may open up a place. Mm-hmm. But you may also need to look at observation. Where does God seem to be opening up doors? Where does it seem like there's a natural next step? Where's there traction in the movement, in the church that you're in, et cetera, et cetera? And then go based on observation and revelation.
That's great. A bit of both and, hey?
Sure.
So now in terms of launching and the process to get there, what I love about talking with you is this isn't a fresh plant that happened a year ago and your head's still spinning. It's been, you know, 4 years. As you reflect, what really worked well that others perhaps listening in could learn from that might be planting a church soon?
So I think you're the expert in this as much as I am, and I love it when the interviewer has more to offer than the person being interviewed, and I think you've done such a great job a few years before we did in terms of planting this. So chip in whenever.
Great, I will chip away.
But I think there's a number of crucial things. I mean, the most important is building a team. You know, you actually don't want to go anywhere until you know who you're going with. And I think that ancient or African proverb, go fast, go alone, go far, go together. Mm-hmm. And even if I were to reflect on our journey, I feel like maybe we went a little faster than potentially gathering that core and deepening that core. Wow. So I know guys who've spent 3 years preparing for a plant. We spent 3 months, maybe 4 months preparing. Wow. And maybe it's a balance between both. And we were grateful to God that he pulled a core together. And we started in October. We had three sort of pre-launch meetings where we gathered a core. We told people what we were about. We then tried to institute the values of our plant, which we tried to say, hey, guys, we're on mission. We're gonna reach the lost as best we can. We're going to build a community, and we're going to make disciples. But we just said those three things, and we said, if you want to be with us, come join us to just do those things. Reach new people, make disciples, and build a community with looking at for the glory of God. You know, that was the mantra, and actually it still is, I think. That's basically what we still do. And so we said, anyone who wants to do that, come join us. And we had three moments where we got into the community, whether we were in the football club or whether we were in one of the restaurants. Mm-hmm. We just gathered people and said, invite your friends to these moments because we want them to look in and get a feel for what we're about.
To backtrack, we also would have said within all the other Common Ground congregations that if that's kind of where that call came from. Hey.
Yeah. Exactly. So we did bandy together, and that was super powerful. I mean, I don't want to forget the amazing gift of being a multi-congregational church where you're enlisting and your buddies who are leading congregations are saying, go, you must go help this new church plant. And we're sending some of the best people, and including your very own sister who came and joined us on our eldership team and gave a year of their lives, brought their families from the southern suburbs. And it was just such an amazing gift to have solid leaders who had been on eldership in other contexts who came and said, we'll co-lead with you for a while until this thing is up and running.
That's wonderful. And I think that we had the same thing happen with Steve and Sarah, people that weren't necessarily right in the community to plant, but said, we will lend our strength and our experience for a year or 18 months. And I've seen it personally through their lives and my sister's, how what an amazing blessing that was to be pioneers for a season. Wow. Before going back to their regular kind of congregations, but also what a blessing that was to us, and I'm assuming to you too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Especially in those early days.
So I think that core team is crucial, core leaders, and then the two things I would say is try to get as many people who are going to be there for the long haul as possible. Mm-hmm. And I encourage people who are planting churches these days to be as tenacious and ambitious as they can be. And of course, in a humble way. I'm not saying an ungodly ambition, but ask boldly. Expect that God might call some people to sell their homes and move into your area, to change jobs, to move schools for their kids, whatever it may be, because of the wonder of planting a church. And I think if I were to do it again, I would certainly make bigger asks of more people, in a sense, not because it's for my mission, but because the wonder of church planting calls out the best in so many. And the stronger your start, the better. And that's probably why I also talk about taking your time, because it's a bit like your first salary. If you're starting in a corporate, the salary you start on is the salary you need to build from. And I think anyone who started their first job knows that building 10% from a small salary takes so much longer than starting from a bigger salary. And I think that applies to church planting. The bigger you can build your core, the bigger you can build your leadership team, the sooner, yeah, and exactly, the faith within the people, the sooner you can maybe cut out a few years of some of those real struggles. Now, that doesn't apply. I got a buddy in Paul who's just planted with him and his wife, and they had two buddies who came from Joburg, and that's what they planted with. And 2 years down the line, they're 50 to 70 people, and man, I celebrate with them. I mean, that is church planting at a whole nother level. But again, I would say to him, if you can take six people rather than four, take them, because every gift you get is going to set you up for future fruitfulness.
Yeah, absolutely. And then some other practical things, Rog, in terms of those preliminary meetings, and then organizing service teams and the timing of when you started and venues, all of that also plays a critical role, I think. Hey, not to get too much into details, but details are important.
Yeah,
hey?
Sure. We had that mantra, all hands on deck. You know, you build a team of, say, 60 people, and you're trying to get a Sunday meeting started. 60 people is basically your skeleton structure to have a kids ministry going, to have a setup team. We've got setup from a container miles from our venue that we meet in, so we got people lugging stuff. So, you know, when you've got a team of 60 and they're rotating over 3 weeks, basically everyone is used over the three-week period to do something, whether it's kids or setup or worship or, you know, tea and coffee, whatever it is. And that's probably why the ownership's so high. But in those preparatory meetings, and I would say three is your bare minimum. We probably had loads of sub-meetings after that. So, you know, you've got your three big looking in, come hear our vision and our values. By the third one, we had people saying, we basically said, which of these things would you like to get involved in? Pop up your hand and
which.
Yeah, it's exactly. We're not asking you if you would like to get involved. We're asking you which of these things you want to get involved in. And that was fantastic because so many people then just found themselves, you know, when we launched, suddenly they are part of the setup team and suddenly they are part of helping us with kids, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, you got to be cautious around different things like kids ministry and making sure you can trust the people that you've got. But once you've got your core, you need to start working on these sub teams and making sure these people are equipped and ready, and then carry your culture. Because I think culture outlasts systems in the sense of you can have great programs and systems, but if you, yeah, and rosters and all those things, which any church planter, there's so much adrenaline flowing through a church planter, you may be administratively challenged, but when it comes to doing something like this, you find ways to make it happen because you're just so psyched on what's happening. But you can't bypass culture. Do you know what I mean? People need to know, we're here to love people. We're here to love the lost. We're here to build a culture of following Jesus, not just, you know, building something to make us look good or keep our Sundays full, you know.
Yeah, it's that intangible thing that when you arrive at a church, you feel or you don't, hey?
Exactly.
Wonderful. Okay, so next question. This is maybe a tough one. What were some assumptions you made when you set out that have proven wrong?
Wow. I think the biggest assumption I made was that I was a tougher, more robust leader than
Rambo
I was.
Leader.
Yeah, I thought I was going to take on the world. And I thought my self-leadership in my inner world was a lot stronger than it is. Wow. And than it was. By the grace of God, I think I've kept my head above water and been able to actually breathe. But there have been times where this church planting story has exposed not my temptation dynamics or some of the more obvious sins. It's the underlying subtle things of the ego, one's ability to not get what you expect. You plant a church, every church planter, when they get what they get, hope they got a little more. I think that's the general story. And what you do with the gap between expectations and reality is kind of indicative of what's going on inside your heart. And I realized that I probably didn't know how to deal with disappointment. And we'd come out of such a flourishing story. And so anything less than a church of 300 people with, you know, just a flourishing kids ministry and loads of staff was going to be a difficult thing to deal with. So probably the thing I assumed was that I could handle this thing of church planting. But it's not to say we've failed. We've had a fantastically fruitful and exciting journey. But I've realized my discipleship was the most sort of necessary thing to keep growing in. And my own heart was very deceptive when it came to being able to deal with the challenges and the letdowns of and people. You realize you come from a church with 15 years of history and you think everyone behaves, you know, well in a church. Everyone understands what it means to follow Jesus on mission and to do team and to work together. And suddenly you realize, I've got some work to do. This took 15 years, my old church. Yeah. We're 2 years in and I've got to really recreate culture. And I assumed culture happened over or a lot quicker than it does. And to do the hard yards around the dining room table, to do the hard yards actually before anyone sees me, when I'm in God's word, in prayer, facing my own shortcomings of a character dynamic of going, I need God more than I need a successful church, more than I need even my leaders to think I'm doing a good job or the people to think we're a fantastic church. I just need to know who I am in God. And I thought I did. But there's nothing quite like the...
Like a church plant.
Yeah, a church plant and everything that comes with it to expose those things.
I think also in a smaller team, which is generally a church planting team,
yeah.
The day-to-day wearing down of the small details that you have to be involved in. Hey, maybe in a bigger team that was dissipated between a few people and people that were more gifted at that and this. And now what I recall is just that feeling of every week we're dealing with this problem with volunteers or this small group issue where normally someone else would be, you know, you'd be sharing that load.
Yeah.
And kind of all, if you don't deal with it, you're at least hearing all about it on
That's
every front.
Absolutely right. You become a jack of all trades. You used to maybe be a specialist if you were a pastor in another church. And suddenly you're exposed to the finances, to the administration, to the operations, to the pastoral dynamics. Every single thing basically feeds back to you and your team. I actually thought you were going to say it's a lonely thing. And as you were talking, I realized that is an assumption I never realized, is that although you're surrounded by and building a fantastic community, you're in a very unique space as a church planter and a church planting family whereby people assume you are the superhero, robust, ready to take on the world. But actually, you're just looking for some friends to do a mission with. And if you can't learn to ask for help and you can't learn to make friends, it can be an even more lonely journey. And I'm so grateful. I remember a pastor once saying, if you want to plant a church, you've got to learn to use that church for your own community. Don't just build a community, be part of that community. And if I hadn't heard that, I think I may have been guilty of being the kind of person who just built a lovely community but then didn't have one of my own. And we've got buddies who are really, they're in our eldership team, but they're also just in our church and even some who are still working out if they're in our church. But having friends in the community at large has been so key to having that grounded, healthy experience of a full life move.
That's wonderful and so important. Okay, so two more reflecting questions. The next one is, what are some ways you could have prepared better? I think you've already covered some of it. Anything else for a would-be church plant? If you could go back in time 5 years, anything you would have told your younger self?
I'm worried that I'm going to say the same thing in different words now, but the one thing I would have done is I would have been more tenacious, would have made bigger asks, like I've said. I would have tried to go bigger in the start in terms of trusting God for more of everything, more people, more volunteers. Just keep trusting for that. It sounds a little like ambitious, but what I'm saying is, as a church planter, try your best. Enlist as many as you can. Be as tenacious as you can, because that starting core is so crucial to being, it's a kind of launch pad forward. And I would have prepared myself in the presence of God way more rigorously, in terms of not skirting the edges of any of the character issues that I need to deal with and face. That said, I think God just uses seasons like that to expose what's actually in us and then gives us the grace along the way, because we don't know everything that's coming up.
So that leads to my last question. What have been some of the biggest rewards of embarking on this adventure? And here I'm thinking of, I know you've recently come back from some long leave, and you've come back with a kind of, I think, a new awareness of, as you said, presence over progress.
Yeah.
Do you want to say anything?
Yeah, that? I mean, you've said those words and took them out of my mouth. I think two things. No, it's so good. It is probably the thing that I so badly want to get, but probably the two rewards as I just listen to your question. The one is the reward of leaders. There's nothing like watching, and we went away for 3 months, and I'll tell you two things. Coming back from a 3-month sabbatical and watching the leaders that God has given you to steward and raise and encourage, and you come back and your church is doing better than when you left it, because these men and women have so seen the mission of God as theirs, is nothing short of breathtaking. It's just astounding. And to see my elders and deacons, I call them mine, not because they're mine, but because I love them so much. Just watching them thriving and flourishing and taking ownership is magnificent. And then I think after all is said and done, we did have a fantastic rest, and we did get to get a little bit of perspective on these last few years of planning the church, and realized that we probably were a bit too bent on progress and trying to take things forward in our own strength, and forgetting that it's God who makes things grow. You know, we think of Apollos who watered and Paul who planted and all these wonderful analogies, but it's God who makes them grow. And I've realized that I want to build a church that doesn't, that catches what I've got. And if I were to be honest, a lot of my church planting life was, let's progress, let's move forward, let's make sure that our church sees that we are moving forward. Look at this, look at the numbers, look at the budgets, look how we're going. And post-sabbatical, I found myself reflecting and going, what if we get to the end of our lives after 10 or 15 or 20 years of planting churches, and our church are bent on progress, but they don't know the presence of God? What a tragic church we could have built, where everyone's going, look, the budgets are good and people are coming. And you might have, in all of the progress, have lost that sense that God is the one who's building his church, and he's the sweetest presence to have in your church. And at some point, you've got to stop that vicious cycle. And it usually, I think, starts with the leaders. And so in my life, our life as a family, our life as elders, we're asking the question, how do we put presence before progress? Progress is crucial, but it's God who makes things grow. How do we make sure we're a people who know the presence of God, the leading of God, the wisdom of God, the ways of God, all of that stuff? And then we get to do a bit of strategic stuff because we love that stuff. We'll never stop doing strategy as leaders. Hey, that's our bread and butter. But we might lose sight of the presence of God. That's sometimes easy to lose sight of.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful. Thank you, Rog. Thanks for just pouring your heart out. And if you are a church planter or thinking about church planting, we hope this has been helpful.
Brilliant.
For you.
Thank you, Julie.
Thank you.